Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. What are we talking about today, Fred?
Well, I purposely didn't tell you before that.
All right, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah. We have to blame Mojan for this. One of the early episodes with her, she said, I'm not going to tell you what the questions are, but I'm going to do a quick rapid fire questions for you. And then she led off with a softball saying something like, so what's your opinion of MTBF? And, so that was easy. But here's a completely different one. And it's pretty much unrelated to reliability engineering directly, but it's more associated with Ascendo reliability. So what is the value of Ascendo reliability? I was asked this the other day. Well, why do you say hi? Where's the value come from? It might be a variation of that. What's the support for
that? The return on investment's very high because you don't have to pay to get the information from the website. So by definition, if you learn a teeny tiny tidbit of information from the Ascendo website, the ROI is infinite. So it has to be high.
That's convenient. And the question that we answered in our last episode, it started off with, thanks for Ascendo reliability and all the information and resources. This is, invaluable, and which corresponds to infinite, I would suggest, in a value scale.
Yeah, well, that's wrong with infinite.
Yeah. But the idea, because I get asked, how do you monetize? And I'm like, well, we don't do banner ads. We don't do all this and that and the other thing. And it's not the direct point at all. And I think you hit it straight dead on the nail or on the head, is that it helps others in our industry create reliable products and systems. And I think we all benefit from that. That company benefits, that person in their career benefits, their customers benefit. And I'm probably customers of more than one of the people that visit Ascendo. So it's, I think it goes around, comes around. But I think there's something more insidious, probably not the right word. But
that sounds like scheming.
It's that I think the direct value comes from that people learn stuff and they're more efficient at work, they're more productive, they solve problems quicker, it helps with their career and all the ramifications through the whole rest of the supply chain as that goes, is part of it. And I think it's a major part of the value of the site. The other part is it encourages people, like in a conference, but it's year-round 24/7, to share their information with each other, to talk to each other, to ask questions of each other. I don't think it's fully utilized yet, but I think we have, 90, I'm adding another contributor this today. I think we're getting close to 100 unique contributors. So podcast episodes, podcasts and webinars and ebooks and article series and stuff like that. Lots of content from lots of different people. And I think that is like a conference, but 24/7. We don't serve coffee at the breaks, so it's not quite the same.
About a conference, though, different. I would say that the analogy of the 24/7 conference is a good one up until a point, that a conference these days is trying to achieve different things than what Ascendo is all about. There's content on Ascendo which would not make conference papers, even though the content on Ascendo is extravagantly more useful and practical. If there was a technique developed in the 1960s that could be explained in a novel and unique way, simplified it using, potentially, more modern tools and IT and stuff like that, that would appear on Ascendo. but that would not be worthy of inclusion in a conference these days.
So in some regards, it's filling a gap that conferences don't have. And I look at the metrics of the what pages, what topics are most visited. And one of the perennial, for years now, and I wrote the article over 10 years ago, was the 8 steps to create an X bar and S chart. And that process was, it's over 100 years old. X bar and R charts and similar were 100 years plus ago. And if I propose that paper, that the 8 steps to create a control chart, I don't think even any conference would accept that. Like, what? But it is sought after and opened and read almost it's close to 400 or 500 times a month, right? And if I could have a conference that had the basics and nobody was too embarrassed to go to a conference that included nothing but the basics, I got 500 people for one specific topic. Imagine that if we could get 8 or 9 topics in there, we'd have 4,000 people at it. So I think it fills the value part is that it fills a gap. And I heard it explained one time years ago. He says, well, I go to Ascendo to look up stuff that I'm embarrassed to ask my boss about because I don't want them to know I don't know how to do a control chart. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad to help.
Well, the other thing too is conferences used to be that. I mean, when the Rams, for example, the Rams Symposium first came out, it was the 1960s.
Yeah.
That was a very exciting time for reliability engineering because a lot of these techniques that we use today were being pioneered and developed for the very first time. So what was journal-worthy material was also very practical at that point in time. And if you read the papers from the 60s and 70s, they're also written in a language we just don't see these days, which is very almost, struggling to find a good term, but the language was barren of emotion. It was just this, and this.
Yeah, here's the steps. Here's what we did. Here's the results. Yeah. Here's we can play with it.
But which is very helpful.
It is, yeah. And so the CRE prep series, and Carl's FMEA stuff. The number one article on Carl's FMEA from the last Inside FMEA series for the last month, when I have data by category, was what is detection, what is occurrence, and what is severity. It was just defining those terms. And you know Carl, he's really good at doing stuff like that. Yet people are looking for it and it's dead on for what they're looking for. So Google and the other search engines serve it up and people visit it. I don't know how many times people are looking at it on an AI screen result. And because I don't have a way to track those. But the idea is that, yeah, it's not the generation out there today weren't attending conferences. I can probably safely say this. There might be an exception or two in conferences in the 20s or in the 1950s and 60s, learning this stuff all firsthand. We're probably two generations out from that for the vast majority of folks in our audiences. And so, yeah, we're not learning this at work. Our training budgets and even money to go to conferences is greatly curtailed from what it used to be. It's like, well, just look it up. And so I think Ascendo fills that gap for a lot of people to get that answer, get that quick, I want to learn a bit about control charts. I'll use that example for a while. There's hundreds of other topics that are like that. But it's part training. It's a backstop. So you can check, is this the right formula? You can get on there and check real quick. I think there's a lot of value in that if the site continues to be a trusted resource. So that's been a concern is how do I make sure it stays relevant and trusted and so on, that kind of stuff. But I don't know how to articulate the nature of the value, but it fills a gap in of what's not readily available elsewhere. in a broad range of stuff. Now, if you have a library of books like I do, then you don't need Ascendo. Just go look it up.
I don't know about that. I mean, the library of books are not written in a particularly, you know, I'd argue that a lot of reliability engineering books aren't written in a digestible way these days.
Oh, no, but I'm old. I sit down and read a book for 2 hours, whereas, you know, I'm not on my phone. I need an answer today or in the next 30 seconds. I know I operate in a different way than a lot of people do. So, but I'm good with my library. And it's a source of so many topics that I've written about. So that's a lot of places where it comes from. But I think the ability of it to be like a conference, the sharing part, it's one is a resource for people to do stuff, but it's also a platform for people, not just, you know, people that founded it or got started at it, but that have a voice and they want to explain something. They want to talk about it on a podcast, or they want to write about it in an article series. One that I just found, and it was by chance, it came up in my feed on LinkedIn, I'm in the last step of getting it set up on the site, and we'll start posting articles probably next week, is called Excellent Engineering Excellence in Africa, by Benjamin, and I'm not going to try to pronounce the last name because I'm quite sure I'm not getting it right. But I should learn how to do it. I haven't talked to him. We traded messages, and his comment was, I'd be very happy to contribute through Ascendo, because it's my goal is that this writing should get as far as it can to as many people as possible. And I'm like, cool, like-minded. And I think that adds value, is that it's a platform for people to find an audience that would take them years to accumulate themselves.
Yeah. And I think it's also a bit of, you know, serendipity as well. Whilst it is free, I mean, for people who want to jump on, it does. The people who are providing the content, you, Carl, me, everybody else, our skills or value as engineers can be more directly measured by, you know, how helpful our stuff is.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, I think I was telling you the story where, I won't say who, but one of my FAMIA course graduates, where I taught, you know, teaching at a company how to do FAMIAs and do it in a way that rapidly makes decisions, helps you make decisions that drastically improve reliability. And you want to focus on the vital few. You won't ever have, there's no such thing as having enough time to complete a FAMIA. That's just not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the best, most well-intentioned management in the world, they will have to allocate a certain amount of arbitrary time for you to do a FAMIA or FAMICA, and you better make sure it's a good ROI on that term.
Right.
Anyway, so one of my graduates who then went to do a systems engineering degree, and he was being instructed by a guy who has a PhD in reliability engineering about how to do FAMIAs and FAMICAs. And when he was telling me the story, saying I was just ready to be part of this because he had all the notes from my course. And he was disappointed because this guy, PhD in reliability engineering, he was saying stuff which ran counter to not only what I was teaching, but the real world. He said it should take 2 to 3 months to complete a FAMIA. Now, this is an academic PhD reliability engineer who nominally has all the credentials you could ever hope to have in the world of reliability engineering, teaching postgraduate coursework on FAMIAs. And when asked, how many FAMIAs have you done, sir, Dr. Reliability Engineer? He said one as part of his coursework. So he's never done a real FAMIA. And he is now essentially synthesizing what he thinks a good FAMIA is. And as soon as you say a FAMIA is going to take 2 to 3 months, and I think he was implying full-time effort, you are not going to get any traction in the real world, nor would anybody get any traction in the real world for any activity. They say you have to spend 2 to 3 months worth of multiple people spending full-time effort on. And so why I'm saying that is you can read articles in Ascendo and see if the author gets it. And that makes it way more valuable in terms of assessing where the people like you or me are are the right fit for being listened to in the future.
Yeah, yeah. And we do. I mean, there is a lot of variability in the writing. I have two criteria generally. It's not promotional. You actually write something practical or useful that somebody could learn from, and not a bunch of call to actions to do this, that, and the other thing. It's not void of call to actions by any means. Any go buy my book kind of stuff is there, but it's not in your face. It's the content, practical, useful first, and then you can mention for more information or whatever to get to it. And the other one is no MTBF, although a few have snuck through. So I haven't been as diligent as I could have been on that. Yeah, and you're making the argument in cases where, yeah, you got to use MTBF. It's like, but anyway, but other than that, I find that somebody said, well, there's already an article about control charts. And I said, there's 50 articles on control charts, and every voice brings a different perspective. And that may resonate with the reader in a different way. You might be using an example on a medical device where I used one on a bicycle, and it removes a barrier if it's written in a product line that they're familiar with. So it's got value in and of itself. And the way you explain it is different than the way I explain it. And so they were, oh, okay, I get it. And so they merrily went off and wrote a whole pile of articles after that. I think the part of it is that it's, if we don't have articles on there from lots of contributors, we don't have stuff there to read. And if we don't have stuff there to read, it reduces the amount of learning that goes on and the primary value piece of it. But I think there is something in it for the contributors. At one point in my career in corporate, I learned about that there was such a thing as a, I'm as bad as you, Chris. It must be contagious. Huh. It's when you're at the top of the ladder and the technological career ladder, you're a fellow. Like I met an IBM fellow and I met an HP fellow. The HP fellow I met, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he's one of the guys that invented the technology for inkjet printers and inkjet technology.
Right.
It was, as a quick aside, it was a fascinating discussion because we spent 2 days, all day, both days, even at lunch, talking about all the ways that inkjet technology really shouldn't work. It's all he wanted to talk about, and it was fascinating. And we ran into this, and we did this, and we ran into that, into this, and we're still not sure why that works, but it does. And he's the guy that invented it with the team that they was called the Fabulous Five at HP. But I learned about that you could be a fellow. And I'm like, oh, wow, how do you do that? So I asked around to some of my senior managers, and they said, well, a number one criteria is that the rest of the organization knows to go to you to get help on a particular subject area or topic or things like that. And it's got to be an important topic. And I'm like, oh, okay. So shortly after that, I started a website and a mailing list and and essentially a webinar series. So I was actively working on being very well known in the organization and answering questions. And that's carried over to Ascendo, is that it's a place for not just me, but for all of us that contribute to be known in our industry, to have a name, to people seek you out at conferences. Like I was at a conference and somebody said, I know that voice. I heard you I listened to your podcast, and we chatted after that. But it's a way, you could write a book, but these days it may not go, vast majority of them don't go anywhere. You might sell 100 copies max, its entire lifetime. But writing a blog or a series or an article series or doing a podcast, you can have thousands of people reading your work, you know, over the first year. So I'm like, you need to, it's a platform for people to get their voice heard. And I think it's not that they're published. It's not going to work great on your resume, but I think it's being more and more recognized that, oh, you just show up and you get good information. And I trust that person now. I'm going to call Chris because I have a problem, and or I want to learn FMEA, and he does these great webinar stuff. I want to, that would be very captivating and I think very effective. Let's get him in here to do that. That's one aspect of it.
Other hypothetical question I often pose to people is, okay, I think of a sports psychologist. Who's the most profound sports psychologist in the world? And you know, people often might think Professor XYZ. Mm-hmm. They're the best, surely. They've researched this, they've looked at that, and you know, they're just amazing at sports psychology. And go, okay, are they a better sports psychologist than Bill Belichick, if you know NFL, or Pep Guardiola, if you follow football, or Phil Jackson, if you follow basketball?
Mm-hmm.
Is the most highly qualified sports psychologist in the world better than the most competent coach in the world?
Yeah, the practitioner of sports psychology.
And the question is not straightforward to answer, but for me, if I had to pick one in rugby league, which not many listeners will know about, it's a guy called Wayne Bennett in Australia. But anyway, that's just a
Australian, of course.
I
think there's some Aussies that would, or some New Zealanders, Kiwis that would disagree with that. But
I don't know. I think they respect the guy. I mean, but yeah, it's an interesting question. Who is a better sports psychologist, the most qualified sports psychologist professor in the world, or?
Well, it's like reliability. Is it the PhD with no practical experience, or is it somebody that's writing about their experience over the last 10 years?
Right.
Yeah. Now, you know my opinion about PhDs, no present company accepted.
They're just the worst, aren't they?
Yeah. I think the best summary is that a good amount of the content on Ascendo is written like I was writing to a coworker to explain how to do something, or a way to think, you know, here's a thought process I use to get through this issue, or here's my opinion of this and why, and so on. And a good amount of the writing is, well, how do you do a control chart? You know, how do you use it? How do you pick which control chart? Really basic stuff. But it's important if it actually helps you solve a problem. And therein lies, we had to figure out a way, Chris, to say, all right, we want 0.1% of all profit generated from the knowledge people have gained from the site. Just, we'll charge the World Bank for it because it's improving the world. Maybe we can make an argument there. I don't think that's going to happen.
But, yeah, we'll see. It might be a stretch.
Yeah. But anyway, it was, it came up the other day. It says, this, you know, that site's really valuable. And it was, do you know how valuable it is? And I'm like, it's only as valuable as somebody wants to pay for it. But I don't think that's the point. It's valuable to the people that visit. It's valuable to people that contribute in many different ways for both of them. And for me, I love the contributing. I like answering questions. I like the ability to help folks based on the experience I've had over the years. And I think a lot of the contributors feel the same way. And it helps our industry, our discipline, if for lack of a better word, have a way to interact in a way that is directly practical. And I think tech papers and conferences kind of miss the mark on that these days.
Oh, I agree that it's just changed. It's just, the main thing about conferences, like I think we've talked about this ad nauseum, but they're there to get the academic scores up for people in universities who have their whose performance is measured in terms of the number of articles they get published. I'm working with the Rams 2026 community for the one that's being held in Europe. And a lot of the feedback we get is that companies will only send people once if their employee authors a paper. They mm-hmm. see that as a bigger return on investment. And they go, well, it just floods the market with you write a paper when you've got something to write about. And going to a conference should not be the trigger for you to realize you've got something to write about something.
Well, there's that, but I'm thinking also, you're on the committee. Why don't you convince them that somebody writing a case study of how they use an XBAR R chart to really improve a process would be a good paper?
Yes. Now, you might be aware of this phenomenon, Fred. Committee members aren't able to influence everything. I don't know if you've come across that situation before.
Yeah, a few times. I know we've talked about it. But anyway, we change what we can. And when I ran into enough roadblocks with trying to change stuff within a professional society or conferences, started Ascendo and hope for the best. And it's exceeded all of my expectations. It's been blast.
You've done really well.
Yeah. And so I'm sure it's valuable. I don't have a number on it. I think it's close to infinity, according to, yep. My PhD buddy here saying that it is. So I have to trust him. He's the doctor. and we'll go with that. So if you're listening to this, and hopefully the title caught your attention, and you know, how valuable is the site to you? I'm not looking for praise for me. I'm looking for praise for the site. And it's almost 100 people have actively contributed to the site. And there's another couple hundred that have indirectly contributed by, you know, and thousands that have come and visited and encouraged it and asked questions and so on. So how valuable is the site to you? What stands out is why we would call this thing useful or valuable. And even better, if you could tell us any success stories, that would be awesome to share. And to talk to about, you know, the 8 steps to do something that really got a huge result in your organization, that'd be awesome. But let us know. Or if you got a question, we haven't covered everything yet, that's for sure. And so let us know if there's something on your mind. And you can do that over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. There's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Chris and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our About pages. So plenty of ways for you to get in touch. We look forward to hearing from you. And I hope this podcast was of value to you.
Totally.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you soon.
No worries, Fred. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.